Poppy Northcutt was in mission control during the Apollo era. She helped get space crews home during Apollo 8 and Apollo 10 through 13. In the 60s, Poppy was a female engineer in an all-boys club. She's been away from that life at NASA for decades now, but today, she returns to Johnson Space Center.
It's so great to meet you.
Thank you, I'm Poppy.
I know.
And that's Emily.
Yes, this is Emily.
I recognize your picture.
Oh, goodness.
Great to see you.
Good to see you. Great to meet you.
Have you done this
before? This is a first for Poppy. Today, she meets a female leader in mission control. Fifty years after we landed on the moon, generation after generation fell in love with space exploration.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
I'm Tamika Weatherspoon, and this is Moonwalk, a series of conversations between the Mars generation, today's NASA leaders, and voices from the Apollo era. I'm bringing together people who are on different paths, but connected by a love for outer space. Poppy Northcutt has never met a female flight director. Emily Nelson isn't just a female flight director in mission control. She's also the deputy chief. It's yet another level of leadership. When she goes to work, she hardly notices her colleague's gender. So when Poppy and Emily first meet, I think they're both trying to reframe their understanding of what it means to be a female engineer. Emily's experience today is quite a bit different than Poppy's was in the 60s. So, how they each see the Apollo missions is also naturally different. Poppy was there. Emily has a deep appreciation, but sees the missions through a different lens. Here's Poppy.
So, what do you think the impact of Apollo 11 is?
I think it did a lot to stretch the imagination. When I brought my grandmother here after I'd been working here a few years, and I brought her on a tour of mission control, and we went to the control room, and seeing that room through my grandmother's eyes and in awe of these missions when you guys were doing all that hard work was an amazing connection to me to finally kind of internalize what it meant to the people who were watching at home while you guys were slaving away for 12-hour days to get those guys there and back safely. Were you the only woman on the team that you were working on, or, and if so, for how long? Like, when did the next one show up?
I was the only woman in an operational role in mission control, in the whole mission control center when I went over there in 8. And I believe I was still the only one through 13.
Wow. And did that in and of itself provide any challenges?
Well, sometimes you felt very isolated and uncomfortable. For example, I remember on 8, especially that first mission, because it was like they had to become accustomed to the idea that there was a woman in there. On 8, I remember one day hearing some chatter in the background, because, you know, you listen to various channels, and I heard some chatter in the back. I kept hearing them mention some particular channel, and they would say, hey, check out what's on channel, whatever. And I was busy, so I didn't have time to look at that. And then after a few days, I thought, I wonder what's on channel, whatever. Well, it was me.
And this was an audio channel?
No, it was a video channel.
The video. They had a camera.
They had a camera on me.
Why? Just because you were different?
I guess.
That's fascinating.
Well, I thought, what have I been doing? I've been scratching. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you become very self-conscious about
it. It would have been nice for them to tell you before you got started. I mean, we're on cameras all the time, but at least we know it.
Well, yes, but it was, I mean, I think it was, you know, look at the woman.
I can't really understand that. I'm proud to say, in this day and age, I don't get it.
Right. Well, I'm glad you don't get it. I'm glad you haven't had to go through that, that kind of thing.
Well, and, you know, we get asked, especially as a woman in mission control, we get asked all the time how hard that is, or does that make the job harder or whatever. And my standard answer is that women like you broke all of that down so that the only thing I have to deal with is being asked the question and figuring out how to answer it. And hopefully the next generation won't even get the question.
Well, I'm so glad that that you don't have that to go through. I would have much preferred to have been the 10th woman in Mission Control or 20th or whatever. Well, when you went in, were you how many other women were flight controllers at that time?
Oh, goodness.
When you first went in? I know that when you became flight director, there was another woman named at the same time, but you had been in the control center before you were named a flight director.
Yeah, so I was a flight controller for about 8 years before I got selected as a flight director. And I would say the numbers of the ratio of women to men matched what was at my engineering school at the time. So maybe 15 to 20% women. And then it has increased over time. It's funny because I never really notice how many women are on a shift with me until I have to wait in line at the bathroom. And I was the 10th female flight director selected. So we had had a number of women selected at that point. I calculated it at one time. And from the point in time that the first female flight director was selected, from that point on, we've had about 25% women. And it was never really a thing. Either I'm just really insensitive to the bias, or there just hasn't been as much bias. I think the NASA culture and the JSC culture in particular, and even specifically the mission control culture, has been very inclusive, and part of the way that we stay innovative is by not particularly caring about where you came from or what you look like, as long as you've got the skills to help the team solve the problem at hand. It doesn't really matter. And especially today, on the International Space Station, we have so many accents around the world, and we've added diplomacy to our skill set in a lot of ways. And so it just doesn't matter whether I'm a woman or if I were a man. It just doesn't come up all that often.
Well, that's a big advance versus 50 years ago, because 50 years ago, Building 30 was a bastion of white males. I mean, there were no black faces in there either. Okay, it wasn't just women. There were no black faces there. I don't think there were any Hispanic faces. I mean, it was white males with white shirts and pocket protectors. You know, people have asked me to compare back to the movie in Hidden Figures. And what I always tell people is that you have to remember there was a gigantic change between when those women were working and when I was working. And that gigantic change was the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
And that was monumental, really. The contractors, I think, became more aware of those requirements of non-discrimination than NASA did at first. I was lucky. I worked for a very progressive contractor. And I think that was a big help for me. But that represented, over time, that represented a huge change for women and for minorities.
Did you have the opportunity over the course of your career to observe that change as it was implemented?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I went to work, I got out of college in 1965, which was about the time that the 64 Civil Rights Act was just going into effect. And even then, it took a while before sex discrimination, for example, was recognized by the courts. Everything was litigated at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that, I mean, you've probably heard of something called hostile workplace, mm-hmm. okay? That terminology didn't even exist. If somebody had said, you know, what are you going to do about the sexual harassment, I wouldn't even have known what that terminology mm-hmm. meant, nor would I have known where to go to report it, nor would there have been anybody to report it to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that there was a big change over that period of time.
Did you ever take the time to recognize, or was it obvious, were there moments where you would recognize that change was happening, where that was a part of your consciousness? Or is it only in looking back when you transitioned from NASA to your post-NASA career, or at the transition from being a computerist to working on trajectory ops?
I recognized it, definitely. I mean, first of all, going from being a computerist to being a member of the technical staff was a very big deal. And it was a very big deal in terms of pay, and part of that was because of the restrictive wage hour laws that affected women only in terms of how much overtime they could be paid. So my consciousness about discrimination really grew very rapidly from the experience of working at that time.
And it's fascinating, even after all these years, my boss, the chief of the flight director office, is the first female chief of the flight director office. So it's interesting to me that, you know, going on 50 years later, we're still getting firsts in some of these areas.
Yes.
And it in some ways, it just feels like timing, you know?
Well, it is timing. And a lot of advances have been made, but also some things have fallen off and sort of gone back. Because when I just came out of school, I think about 30% of the computer programmers were women. And my understanding is that's now dropped off to about 18%.
That is also a fascinating thing to me. The whole concept that, so in high school, I tutored math, and I've always been a math person. And my family never communicated any of the boys are good at math, girls are not kind of a concept. And so that was a foreign concept to me until I was tutoring girls who had been taught to believe that for years. And that was the only problem they were having with math, was that they had been taught to believe that they were bad at it. But it's a little fascinating how the social mores change over time. And so you go from calculating is a woman's job, that's woman's work, and computer programming is woman's work, to it's a completely male-dominated field, not 20 years later. And socially, I don't understand how that happens, really.
But it has to do with money.
Well, I guess that's true.
Because as the money goes into the field, the number of women goes out.
Is it really just...
they're inversely proportional.
I guess that makes sense. It's disappointing.
I mean, it's the same thing as in the teaching profession. I mean, when males were predominantly the teachers, the salaries relatively to salaries in general and the community in general were much higher. And as women went into the field, the salaries dropped off.
So what's next? Where's the next flip in male jobs versus female jobs culturally? Although legally, we don't have them classified that way anymore.
Right.
Where do you think we're going next?
I don't know. I mean, we now have... half of the people in med school are women. So, you know, if history continues the way it has in the past, I mean, doctors will not be making as much money as they used to.
That's fascinating.
Relative to the rest of the population.
And programmers will.
And programmers will.
Moonwalk was produced and written by me, Tamika Weatherspoon, with audio support by Shannon Harrison, graphics by Akalina Sanchez, and editing by Todd Holslander. Our executive producer is Don Geraci. You can see videos, behind-the-scenes images, and more from this series at houstonpublicmedia.org/moon.